Welcome to Progressive News Network here on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Janine Maloff. I'm the producer and host. You know, I wasn't sure what I was going to report on this week on our Sunday show. There's so many things going on, and it seems like the second I know what I'm going to do, maybe a week in advance, something else happens. We live in insane times, and that's really a terrible understatement, but it's true. So I kind of put this show together, I'll admit it, last minute, all right, a few hours before airtime. It's something that I've been thinking about for quite a while, but then I've just covered other things. And this really deals with the role corporate media has played in not only whitewashing Trump's felonies and ignoring them in favor of reporting on the brain-dead horse race aspects of the presidential race, but also what they're calling sane washing, because you don't have to really be a psychiatrist to observe Donald Trump in action and realize this man is not exactly the picture of mental health, all right? And given his advanced age, yeah, I mean, it's ironic that they were pushing the idea not too long ago that President Biden was exhibiting signs of dementia, which I'll argue he was not. President Biden is a stutterer, and as somebody who is a speech-language pathologist, yeah, I'm qualified to diagnose that. President Biden in recent years also moves like someone who's in extreme pain, especially anything that radiates down from his spine, and turns out, yeah, he's got neuralgia. All right, that explains a whole lot. I don't know if any of you have ever been in extreme pain. You don't want to talk too much, all right? You can't concentrate on anything except the pain. So y'all need to kind of get over yourselves. But sane washing, when you look at Donald Trump, however, getting back to the original argument, it's clear, you know, with his constant word salad, his inability to know what's going on at any time, yes, it looks like the man may very well have dementia and is definitely not competent to hold any office, much less the President of the United States, who has a virtual monopoly on the nuclear button. Think about that real long and hard. Doesn't matter whether you're a conservative or a liberal, you need to think responsibly as an adult, not like the idiots in Trump's, I'll just call it lynch mob, because that's what it is. Trump's base is his lynch mob, pure and simple. There's nothing else about it. So I didn't get a chance to put out the advert yet, but you'll see it. Basically, today's show, the title is Corporate Media Sane Washing Trump. Corporate Media Sane Washing Trump Ignoring Felonies. They don't give you much space on Blog Talk to put your title in. So it starts out, you know, just 2 days ago, this past Friday, federal judge Tanya Chutkan, and she's the judge over the, you know, the insurrection case, the election interference. She released the files prepared by special prosecutor Jack Smith in that same election interference insurrection case. Now, before that, what file had been available had been heavily redacted, but this newly released file exposed previously redacted sections. There are still some sections that are redacted, but nowhere near like it was before. Get this, though. In spite of the 1,900 pages of evidence, that's almost 2,000 pages, folks, against Trump, the mainstream, in other words, also known as the corporate media, has basically ignored Trump's actions in this case. Instead, they choose to downplay this mountain of evidence. Now, that would be enough. You know, the mountain of evidence should be enough to draw attention to this. But corporate media seems to be working feverishly hard to protect what I call their clickbait king, Donald Trump. And, you know, clickbait, that's a term they use online. And basically, a lot of clicks equate to advertising revenue, money. More clicks, the more advertising agents, the more clicks, the more some products are going to want to advertise on your show, all right? So you have corporate media that call themselves news, And frankly, they're more concerned with getting that ad revenue than actually reporting the news. So they're covering it up, all right? But it's not even that. There's more. Not only is corporate media ignoring the Jack Smith evidence in favor of the horse race, but for the last year, practically, they've ignored the 34 convictions against Trump in the hush money case. He was convicted on 34 accounts. All right? So, unfortunately, though, that's not all. As I said a few seconds ago, corporate media has been eagerly sane-washing Trump's antics, his habitual word salad, and the displays of obvious dementia. So this show is calling out corporate media as they act as, I'll just say it, propagandists for the fascists of the GOP. That is our one story today. We will also have our musical parodies as well. We have three prepared, and then we'll have final thoughts. And hopefully my voice will hold out. All righty. So let's move on with the show. So we know that on Friday, Judge Tanya Chutkan unsealed the file in the insurrection case. And that, you know, saw that as reported by Lawfare Media. We're going to glance at this just for a second because we have a lot to get through. This is a piece that was written on Lawfare. Lawfare is an interesting publication, all right? To give you a little background here, I'm right at their website. It's about Lawfare. It says, quote, Lawfare is a nonprofit multimedia publication dedicated to, quote, hard national security choices, end quote. We provide nonpartisan, timely analysis of thorny legal and policy issues through our written, audio, and other content, all of which you can find here. We strive to achieve academic-level depth with magazine-level readability at the pace of news. We aim to improve the discourse on the law and policy of – I'm sorry, let me start again. I'm a little off today. We aim to improve the discourse on the law and policy of national security – with a relentless focus on We aim to improve the discourse on the law and policy of national security with a relentless focus on substantive issues that matter in a fashion that is useful to policymakers and practitioners, but also accessible to anyone who wants to access it. Our areas of coverage range from national security law, threats to democracy, cybersecurity, executive powers, content moderation, domestic extremism, and foreign policy, among many others. Lawfare comprises an in-house team of editors and correspondents, as well as an array of regular contributors ranging from current and former government officials to journalists, practicing lawyers, academics, and other experts. So you get the idea about Lawfare, okay? I wanted you to at least know this is a legitimate source. All right, so this was written this Friday, October 18th, by Catherine Pompilo. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing her name correctly. The headline is Chutkan, in other words, Judge Tanya Chutkan. Chutkan unseals four-volume appendix to Smith's 165-page immunity filing. So what this article deals with, first Jack Smith had to file to get the bigger file, released. And the unsealed portions of the appendix include interview transcripts, memorandums, handwritten notes, and more. So Jack Smith submitted this 165-page motion called Motion for Immunity Determinations, and that's in the January 6th case against Trump. I'm just reading straight from this now. Quote, the unsealed portions of the appendix include public tweets and retweets from Trump and others, memorandums detailing the fake electors plot and president of the Senate strategy, handwritten notes from meetings prior to January 6, 2021, raw emails, text messages, letters, transcripts of televised interviews, January 6 committee interview transcripts, transcripts of Trump's phone calls with state officials, and more, end quote. One thing I'll add about Lawfare as well, Lawfare is published by the Lawfare Institute, which is in cooperation with Brookings. So Smith's filing was a response to the Supreme Court's July 1st ruling on presidential immunity. You know, that's the asinine ruling. This is me talking now, where the it was written by the Chief Justice, John Roberts, where they granted presidents absolute immunity, but in certain things. And then they made a differentiation between official acts and private acts. Now, keep in mind, and I know John Roberts isn't stupid, all right? Corrupt? Yes. Stupid? No. Think for a minute. If you granted a president, any president, absolute immunity from any official act, doesn't matter whether it's perjury, stealing, acts of treason, giving our secrets away to our enemies, spying on the United States, murder, genocide, whatever. It's all hunky-dory, according to John Roberts, as long as it's called an official act. So if you've got a president that has been given the powers of a monarch, what's to stop that president from saying anything I do, period, is an official act, including going to the restroom and wiping my own dirty ass? Seriously. But this is the limits that Jack Smith had to deal with. And so he separate in this filing, he called these things connected to the insurrection private acts of a candidate campaigning as opposed to official acts. Because if they're called private acts, then yes, Trump can be prosecuted for it. He doesn't have immunity over private acts. But again, what the Supreme Court did was vile. Okay, that's my own opinion. But Jack Smith, smart lawyer, this is what he did. So Smith, he filed this motion on October 2nd, and the idea was to persuade Judge Chutkan that the Supreme Court's ruling would still allow for Trump's prosecution regarding the insurrection, you know, as long as it was private acts. So it says here, I'll just read straight from this. Smith's filing came in response to the Supreme Court's July 1st ruling on presidential immunity, which affords the executive immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts. Smith's October 2nd motion, which aimed to persuade Chutkan that the Supreme Court ruling still allows for Trump's prosecution for his alleged efforts to overturn the results of the 2020 election, revealed a new tranche of evidence against the former president. As Lawfare editors wrote of the filing, quote, "It's the closest the public will likely come to understanding the details of the January 6th prosecution before voters head to the polls. And it provides insight into how Smith is hoping to navigate the obstacle course of the immunity decision as he moves forward with the case." And Lawfare rightfully lists all four volumes of the redacted appendix. You can look at them yourself. The first one is 723 pages, then 246 pages, then 536 pages, and then 384 pages. It's a lot. So this is an important thing. But once again, the mainstream corporate media, they're still focusing on the horse race when all eyes should be on this. Because we're talking about whether or not, God forbid, Trump gets back in office, we have a dictator monarch. And instead, they're paying attention to the stupid horse race. It's asinine. So that's number one. Number two, let me go back here. I'm sorry, folks. This has been a little. Excuse me. So this is what we have to look forward to, okay? The motion for immunity determinations. And I'm going to read from the first page of Jack Smith's actual filing, the short filing, you know, only 165 pages. United States versus Donald Trump. In the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, criminal number 23-CR-257-TSC. And that's just it. Donald Trump is a criminal. He is a convicted felon. This is something that should be on everyone's lips. So Jack Smith wrote government's motion for immunity determination. Quote, the defendant, that'd be Trump, quote, the defendant asserts that he is immune from prosecution for his criminal scheme to overturn the 2020 presidential election because he claims it entailed official conduct. Not so. Although the defendant was the incumbent president during the charged conspiracies, his scheme was fundamentally a private one. Working with a team of private co-conspirators, the defendant acted as a candidate when he pursued multiple criminal means to disrupt, through fraud and deceit, the government function by which votes are collected and counted, a function in which the defendant, as president, had no official role. In Trump v. United States, the Supreme Court held that presidents are immune from prosecution for certain official conduct, including the defendant's use of the Justice Department in furtherance of a scheme, as was alleged in the original indictment, and remanded to this court to determine whether the remaining allegations against the defendant are immunized. The answer to that question is no. This motion provides a comprehensive account of the defendant's private criminal conduct, sets forth the legal framework created by Trump for resolving immunity claims, applies that framework to establish that none of the defendant's charged conduct is immunized because it either was unofficial or any presumptive immunity is rebutted, and requests the relief the government seeks, which is at bottom this, that the court determine that the defendant must stand trial for his private crimes as would any other citizen. Okay? You can put the rest together yourself, but that's basically Jack Smith, smart guy, brilliant lawyer. He's working within the framework that the Supreme Court, under the direction of John Roberts, we now know, okay, this was John Roberts doing, he has to follow, period. Everybody should be talking about this. Not the damn horse race. Not whether or not Kamala has an evil laugh. Not watching Trump, I guess he dances? I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure if this little fist movement here, if he's dancing or if he's basically getting ready to load his diaper. I really don't know. All right, let's move on. So this is what we're dealing with here. And God hoping, you know, Donald Trump and whoever helped him will be brought to justice. So from 2 days ago, what is Trump's response to all this? Well, we have media, but it's from Great Britain, BBC. BBC News. This was written 2 days ago by Madeleine Halpert. The headline is Trump called judge evil for releasing case files before election. Okay. Again, this is Trump throwing another big tantrum. You know, Donald Trump apparently called Judge Chutkan, quote, the most evil person, end quote, because she released over, you know, 1,800, 1,900 pages of evidence that special counsel Jack Smith, you know, put together, okay, put bluntly. So the basically Trump then also said that U.S. District Court Judge Tanya Chutkan's rejection, you know, of his request to delay releasing new evidence until after next month's vote amounted to, quote, election interference, end quote. No, it doesn't, okay? The fact is what the court does is independent of the election. Will it affect the election? Maybe. So what? This is a criminal case, period. The court is independent of that, period. You know, separate body of government. According to this, quote, legal analysts have debated whether filings in the case breach a Justice Department internal rule that prosecutors avoid any investigative step that might affect an election within 60 days of voting, end quote. Here's the thing. That's an internal rule, not necessarily a law. Okay? This is about a serious criminal case. The public has a right to know. And the public's right to know whether or not Donald Trump basically tried to overthrow the government and tried to overthrow the Constitution itself, the public's right to know that information overrides Trump's little tantrum that it might affect the election. So what? And apparently Judge Chutkan, she made a really smart point. She argued, you know, kind of the opposite. She said that if she had kept the files secret, then that also could have been, quote, construed as election interference. Okay? Judge Chutkan wrote the following, quote, if the court withheld information that the public otherwise had a right to access solely because of the potential political consequences of releasing it, that withholding could itself constitute or appear to be election interference, end quote. And she's right. And again, this is a criminal case, period. Donald Trump doesn't get to dictate. So the new evidence is out there now. So apparently on Friday when Judge Chutkan released it, Trump was on a podcast with somebody called Dan Bongino, who's some sort of right-wing media personality. And Trump, you know, really lambasted Judge Chutkan. And then he called the special counsel, quote, a sick puppy, end quote. Well, whatever. You know, so what? So what? I mean, Donald Trump can call me a sick puppy. Make my day, okay? I really don't care, because at least we're not criminals, okay? The indictment really revolves around January 6th, the riot, and it accuses Trump, quote, of illegally conspiring to overturn his election defeat 3 months earlier to Joe Biden, okay, end quote. And then Trump really went off. You know, you talk about someone who has a persecution complex. You know, he was complaining about the people that have been detained that participated in January 6th, the rioters. And then he compared how the rioters have been, you know, put in jail where they belong. And he compared it to the internment, get this, of Japanese Americans during World War II. The quote from Trump was, quote, why are they still being held? Nobody's ever been treated like this. Maybe the Japanese during Second World War, frankly, end quote. Talk about gall. Seriously? Japanese Americans were interred illegally. They had done nothing wrong just because they happened to be Japanese. That's it. They were American citizens, and their rights were violated. The insurrectionists are in jail because they committed a crime. Period. So because of the Supreme Court ruling on July 1st, you know, that you can't prosecute a president for official acts, which is absolutely asinine, Jack Smith was forced to, you know, form a go-around and say, no, these are private acts. And I don't blame him. Okay? I really don't. And you have to keep in mind, you know, this article goes on to say, quote, the documents released on Friday include transcripts of interviews with the 6th January House Committee that investigated the U.S. Capitol riot, parts of Pence's autobiography, and fundraising emails sent to voters. It is unclear if the January 6th case will ever go to trial. Trump is expected to end the prosecution if he returns to the White House. He is facing several other criminal cases. He already has been convicted on 34 felony counts in New York in relation to a hush money payment, end quote. Again, it's this criminality on Donald Trump's part and all anybody who enabled him. This is what mainstream media should be focusing on, not the damn horse race, not J.D. Vance's stupid childless cat lady crap. Take a little drink. My throat is not good, but again. So we have another article here. And this is from Dame Magazine, which I believe is based also in England, the feminist magazine. And this is a piece written by Andrea Grimes back in May 31st, 2024. The headline is 12 NY, in other words, New York, 12 New York jurors did what the media won't. Amen. And then it goes on to say, quote, Trump has always shown us who he is, but neither mainstream news outlets nor GOP lawmakers would do what a dozen brave New Yorkers did yesterday back in May. Call it like they saw it and hold the former president to account. Amen. Amen. Hallelujah. Okay. Again, except for a few progressive outlets, nobody's talking about this. And while progressive outlets have done a great job of it, there's a lot of people that won't go near it. Okay, so I'm just going to read from it. It starts out, quote, when a New York City jury handed down 34 consecutive guilty verdicts against Donald Trump in his hush money trial yesterday, I knew I had to do two things quickly. First, I poured myself a celebratory bourbon, even if it was only just after 4 p.m. here in Texas. And second, I hopped back into the just-filed draft of a freelance column I'd written for another national news outlet to update my description of the former president from criminally indicted to finally, and with relish, convicted felon. I love it. It's these little joys that make covering our American political hellscape occasionally tolerable. I love that sentence. I'm going to read it again. It's so brilliant. I wish I had written it. It's these little joys that make covering our American political hellscape occasionally tolerable. Writing here for Dame is one of those joys, too. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be published in a women-led outlet that has long refused to treat Trump the candidate, Trump the president, and Trump the desperate, bumbling, and blathering man on trial as anything other than what he is, a fascist, a bigot, a grifter, a liar, a puppet, and an outright threat to our country and our communities, end quote. Brilliant. But then it goes on to how mainstream and legacy journalists, they could call him something else, like everyone else does, a criminal. Okay? I'm just going to read it. Now even mainstream and legacy journalists can call him something else, something they know he is as well as anyone else does, a criminal. But calling Trump a criminal is only a small part of the solution to a nearly decade-long problem with the political press's coverage of the man. Okay. So, you know, the article goes on to explain how left-leaning media, you know, basically, you know, that Trump's lies are rarely called out, you know, for what they are. They're, you know, blatantly racist, xenophobic, bigoted. I myself have called him out from the very beginning as a Nazi, because he is. And, you know, it says here, it says, quote, for a long time, I and other left-leaning media critics have been fixated on semantics, and that these other things are rarely called out in the mainstream or legacy press. But then she goes on to say, quote, but semantics are the symptom, not the disease. And goes on to say, quote, whatever the mainstream and legacy press has called Trump, they have rarely and certainly not consistently covered the man as the lying, grifted bigot he is. Some, such as New York Times executive editor Joe Kahn, have been more honest than others about hiding their rank cowardice behind poor editorial judgment. Trump's abuser politics depend on his fear. His continued success is built on the media's terror as a prospect of being accused of bias if it dares describe his words and actions in plain language. His career is predicated on saying and doing things so outlandish, cruel, and incredible that the mere act of naming them makes his observers wonder if they are making it all up, and his winking supporters act as if it's all just a show. Okay, and then the article goes into the fact that Trump's been in court most of his life, okay? But it's been civil things, and he often loses, okay? But over the year, you know, he has a reputation for not paying his workers. He's been taken to court time and time again. And yet, all this stuff about, you know, we want to talk about deadbeat, that's Donald Trump, but it's had practically no negative effect on his reputation. And this is the problem here. People are convinced that he is this businessman, but he's not. He's a con man. I mean, I think he's the only alleged business person that lost money and went bankrupt with a casino. Think about that. casinos are pretty much guaranteed profit. He went bankrupt. And the article goes on to explain that facts in journalism matter. And they do. Okay? And when you look at the facts, according to this article, Donald Trump, he's a convicted felon on 34 felonies. Okay? And this was a hometown jury, you know, in other words, in New York. Okay? She went on to say he's not embattled. He's not. He's not a master negotiator. He's not playing four-dimensional chess. He's just a criminal. And the one skill I would say, and I agree with this writer, that Donald Trump has is he knows, to put it in Midwestern terms, he knows how to whoop up a lynch mob. Okay? That's what January 6th was. It was a lynch mob. And contrary to popular opinion, a sizable chunk of those people were not low-income, ignorant people. A sizable amount of them were affluent professionals with advanced degrees. They knew better. They don't care. Okay. But 12 New Yorkers that were vetted in an actual court of law, convicted. And that matters. It absolutely matters. And as for bias, so what? Everybody has a bias. Bias is not the same thing as lying. All right? Bias means, yes, you have an affinity or a preference for a particular side. Not the same thing as lying, however. You know, when I publish these days, I publish a lot of places. These days it's Nation of Change and Eurasian Review and Newsbreak. When I publish, they call it an op-ed or an editorial. I'm open about my bias, okay? You know, I'm lean progressive, let's put it that way. But I probably use more documentation than somebody with a straight news story. I'm open about my bias. I don't apologize for it, but again, I use facts and logic. So, you know, the day Donald Trump calls me by name and says, Jeanine Maloff, you're biased against him, that's my red badge of courage, baby. I'm just going to tell you that right now. Donald Trump is a felon, period. And we need to keep saying that. Do you want a criminal, a grifter, controlling the nuclear button? Keep in mind, most Americans don't understand this, but, and I'm kind of going off the story a bit, when it comes to our nuclear weapons in the United States, people think, well, the Congress would say, nah. There's only one person that controls the nuclear weapons, and that's the president. It shouldn't be that way, but it is. The president, any president, has a monopoly on the nuclear button. Keep in mind, people talk about, oh, just nuke them. You nuke somebody, they're going to nuke you back. Mutual destruction, okay? Nobody's going to be left standing. Or those that are won't want to live. And again, Trump fed, he fed the red meat of hatred and bigotry to people that were already inclined to do so. You know, I have said, and I agree with this writer, that Trump really is the symptom, not the disease. You borrow their phrase. All right. Trump had to have an audience. And for too long, especially the Democratic Party and progressives just assumed things were better now. Nah. It just went underground, okay? Seriously. You know, when I see fellow Jews and they're shocked by the wave of anti-Semitism, I'm not, okay? I'm not at all. I've experienced it my entire life. Of course, I look more ethnic. And then, you know, I get this question, like, what nationality are you? And what they really want to know is what race I am. I'm open about being a Jew, and so I'm very aware of anti-Semitism. No shock there. Trump saw that opportunity, and he took advantage of it. He saw it, and it began really with that asinine, stupid show of his, The Apprentice. All right? Everybody connected with that show should be really just ostracized as nothing else. Okay? That show, I don't like reality TV to start with. I think it's stupid, but The Apprentice made Trump look more competent than he is. He's not competent at all. You know, again, the way he stayed rich is he took money from Russian oligarchs. You know, I have two books on the subject. And Russian oligarchs don't give away money without Putin's blessing. And at that point, then, you're in Putin's hip pocket. There's no guesswork here. You know, Trump is a Russian asset, you know. And this is serious. I mean, Trump doesn't care about anyone except Trump. All righty. So I'm kind of going down in this. I'm not going to read the whole article, but here's a paragraph that I think is very telling about the mainstream media, corporate media. Quote, as soon as Trump's 34 guilty verdicts came down, the talking heads turned seamlessly to his conviction's effect on the presidential race. I'm going to stop here for a second. They should have been talking about the convictions and the fact that Donald Trump is a crook. How's it going to affect his chances to regain the Oval Office? No, wrong. Okay. Now, the writer goes on to say it makes sense. Quote, a convicted felon running at the top of the Republican ticket for the highest office in the country is unprecedented, and we're already living in unprecedented times. Goes on to say, quote, the question of whether Trump's convictions will sway voters is an important and horrifying one. But the fact that we're facing the question itself should make anyone's blood run cold. It's not can he win, but how did we get here that we're even asking, end quote. And that's the point. How did we get here? You know, there was a time when if a president was outed as a possible criminal, suspected of criminal activity, that was enough to kill them politically. They didn't have to be convicted. But this man's still running. One thing the writer wrote, quote, Trump has never earned anything in his nearly 80 years, on earth besides notoriety as a swindler. But he leveraged that into a brand and then into the presidency. And it's the truth. Okay? You know, this is what we're dealing with, and the mainstream media are focusing on the horse race, on clickbait, instead of reporting the fact that this man is a criminal. He cannot be trusted, and your not talking about it helps enable him into that position of power once again. That's crazy. Here it goes. Their writer goes on to say, quote, Trump has never hidden who he is, as documented by Slate, while at the same time making a career out of threatening to destroy anyone who sees through him. Trump is a racist and a misogynist sexual predator and a rapist. Okay? A rapist as documented by Washington Post. He's a liar who would say any self-serving thing at any moment. His lies are deadly. He is an unrepentant grifter whose scams include selling $60 Bibles. And his lies are deadly, according to KFF Health News. And this had to do with, you know, the disinformation, the lies told about COVID. This was written in 2020 by KFF News. The headline is Lie of the Year, the Downplay and Denial of the Coronavirus by Daniel Funk, PolitiFact, and Katie Sanders from PolitiFact. Okay? And, you know, this is article talks about that point. COVID had killed more than 300,000 in the United States. And it talks about how Trump admitted to Bob Woodward in tapes that he knew COVID was deadly. Okay? He knew it was airborne, tricky, and, quote, more deadly than even your strenuous flus. And this is as documented in this article by the Washington Post and Woodward's book. And you got to remember, when Woodward did that, those set of interviews, they were all tape recorded, and he had Trump's permission to tape record them. Hundreds of thousands of people died because of Trump's lies. People forgot about that. They can't afford to forget about it. Okay? Okay. So, you know, and it goes on. I'm just going to read the last couple paragraphs. Quote, just because a cowed and compliant media has too often allowed Trump to say and do whatever he wants while making threats and laughing in their faces about it all doesn't mean we have to keep it up. We can stop any time, and what better time to stop than after 34 guilty verdicts? We needn't put his surrogates on blast to launder his every grievance and crackpot. Let me read again. We needn't put his surrogates on blast to launder his every grievance and crackpot lie. We needn't continue to treat his every fit of pique and persecution fantasy as breaking news just because he's a reality television star who occupied the Oval Office for 4 years. We can stop legitimizing his victim complex at any time. We don't need to do any of that work when the guy's already got a Supreme Court justice happy to turn the American flag upside down in his honor. Now the media must finally drum up the courage to treat Trump like the criminal, the fascist, and yes, the former president he is. It shouldn't be hard. After all, a dozen average New Yorkers with more guts and gumption than scores of politicians and pundits have just shown us how it's done, end quote. Amen. Amen. So right now, I'm going to take a break for a few seconds, and we're going to move on to saying washing. Okay. And we're back. Okay? Gave me a chance to drink a little tea there. All right, now the same washing issues. Those of you who aren't familiar with this term, it's kind of new. You're familiar with the term whitewashing, okay, which is an old term. You know, back in the early 1900s, you would whitewash a picket fence, and it would cover up the dirt. Okay? So that term came to mean whitewashing something, whitewashing a story, or whitewashing the actions of a politician meant you basically told stories and made it look not so bad to cover up the dirt, cover up the criminality. Dirt and criminality, basically synonymous. So we have a piece here from the Columbia Journalism Review. Okay, again, legitimate source. The same washing issue. And this was written by John Alsup. It was published September 9th, 2024. And it just, the headline simply is a question. Is the press same washing Trump? Okay. In other words, are they downplaying his lunacy? I'll read straight from this. Quote, there's a hot new term doing the rounds among media critics, same washing. The term itself actually isn't new, and it wasn't born in media criticism circles per se. According to Urban Dictionary, it was coined in 2020 on a Reddit page for neoliberals, which Linda Kinsler wrote about recently for CJR, Columbia Journalism Review, and meant, quote, attempting to downplay a person or idea's radicality to make it more palatable to the general public, end quote. And it was deployed in discussions around, for example, defunding the police. Recently, though, various observers have applied the term to media coverage of Donald Trump. Aaron Rupar, a journalist who is very active on X, has been credited with coining "same washing" in this specific context, but the term appeared to really blow up last week, in other words, first week of September, after Parker Malloy wrote a column about it in the New Republic. He expanded on the idea as a guest on the podcast, Some More News. The word has since been picked up by the media bigwigs, including Paul Krugman and Rachel Maddow, and appeared in outlets from Ireland to India. Again, end quote. I'm just reading straight from the article. Quote, as applied to Trump, the idea is that major mainstream news outlets are routinely taking his incoherent, highly abnormal rants, be they on social media or at in-person events, and selectively quoting from them to emphasize lines that, in isolation, might sound coherent or normal, thus giving a misleading impression of the whole for people who didn't read or watch the entire thing," end quote. And that's really vile. That's propaganda, pure and simple, where you take it out of context and you don't show all the lunacy. What they're saying. It goes on to say, quote, "In her column, Malloy called out CNN for sanitizing," I love that word, sanitizing, "called out CNN for sanitizing a Trump screed about tomorrow's presidential debate, and the New York Times for omitting an allusion to a conspiracy theory about vaccines and autism from its summary of a Trump pledge to tap Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to make health policy. Since then, she and others applied the same analysis to coverage of Trump's incoherent remarks, particularly around the cost of child care, and a proposed Elon Musk-led efficiency commission at an economic forum in New York." Okay. Malloy wrote the following, quote, "This same washing of Trump's statement isn't just poor journalism. It's a form of misinformation that poses a threat to democracy," end quote. I'm going to read that line again because Parker Malloy said it perfectly. Again, this is Parker Malloy, direct quote of hers. Quote, "This same washing of Trump's statement isn't just poor journalism. It's a form of misinformation that poses a threat to democracy," end quote. And I'm not reading from it right now. And when you have outlets like the New York Times and CNN committing this type of propaganda because they're fearful, we're in trouble, folks. Make no mistake about it. And Trump is incoherent. All right, Malloy wrote a similar piece in her regular column, and it headlined, quote, "By reframing Trump's incoherent, inaccurate ramblings as bland political copy, journalists are carrying water for the president," end quote. And it's true. All right. In 2020, Malloy also was quoted, she was, I think, with the watchdog group Media Matters for America, and she quoted from a recent article in which Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic, criticized headlines about Trump rally that focused on extraneities like the weather and Trump's frustration with a teleprompter rather than his bizarre rhetoric about sharks. Okay? And that's scary. You know, The Atlantic usually is a pretty good publication. And, you know, well, let me go back here. Okay, so he is criticizing. All right, my bad. Folks, I'm tired. All right. Goes on to say, last week, quote, "Amid all the sane-washing discourse, other critics expressed related ideas without using that the word. In other words, you know, sane-washing. It goes on to say, quote, I'm still reading from CJR, quote, "The Atlantic's Isabel Fatal re-upped Goldberg's column in the context of Trump's economic remarks, noting that when she read some of the coverage, she could, quote, witness in real time the process of trying to impose sense where there is none," end quote. Pretty much says it, okay? Let's see now. The LA Times, a writer named Michael Hiltzik, argued about media descriptions of another recent Trump appearance. And this was a Trump appearance where Trump suggested that, as I know it sounds crazy, kids are going to school and coming back a different gender, and that the media descriptions of that, quote, did not give anything like the flavor of his diatribe, okay? And Hiltzik explained also that let me just read this. I was trying to put it in my own words, but it's kind of a long sentence. So, quote, "At the LA Times, Michael Hiltzik argued that media descriptions of another recent Trump appearance in which he suggested that children are going to school and coming back a different gender did not, quote, give anything like the flavor of his diatribe and called for ignoring his own paper's rule that, quote, we shouldn't apply language associated with mental illness to people who aren't known to be mentally ill, end quote. And I agree, all right, if Trump is showing signs of lunacy, I don't care what the rule is. You need to report what's there, not soft pedal it. On MSNBC, Mike Barnicle blasted media because Barnicle said they're not really covering Trump as, quote, a damaged, delusional old man. You get the drift here, all right? This article goes on to say that way too often you've got major, corporate media outlets, they clean up Trump's language, especially with headlines and leads. And they clean it up to a point, really, let's say they rewrite it to the point it doesn't even resemble what Trump said. And so you think, oh, it's not so bad. And this is really a problem here. So then further down this article, there's a question, quote, if journalists are sometimes stain-washing Trump, why are they doing it? End quote. That's a good question. Now, critics, including Malloy, but also Barnicle, they suggested that, they want balanced coverage, which really is about a false equivalence, all right? And balanced coverage or fair coverage is one thing. That does not mean a false equivalence. You can't compare, some name-calling by leftists with the violent insurrection of January 6th. That's a false equivalence. It doesn't work. Part of it, some of it is there's this bias towards coherence, okay? And let's see now. Goldberg basically said, quote, it works like this. Trump sounds nuts, but he can't be nuts because he's a presumptive nominee for president of a major party, end quote. Again, they're covering up for Trump. That's what corporate media is doing. That's not journalism. That's propaganda. And that's propaganda for a would-be fascist. And everyone that participates in it to be fired. These Trump's stupid lines, you're fired. These people should never work in journalism again if they are pushing propaganda to defend a would-be fascist like Trump or any Republican that backs that. And some Democrats do too. This is really, and this is what sane washing is. Okay, they're making him sound more with it than he actually is. Further down in this article, quote, if sane washing, the incoherent things Trump says is a problem, then so is failing to proportionally cover his all too coherent threats. To whatever extent journalists show people Trump's unadulterated speech, it will always be part of our job to describe it. At root, the critics of sane washing are really just asking the media to, quote, report accurately on what we are all seeing in front of us. So even though Trump sounds crazy, his threats against people that he hates are very coherent. All right? Because, crazy people aren't always crazy. But this is what it is. Okay? So towards the end of this article, this article was written right before the one debate he had with Kamala. Part of it reads, quote, unlike at the Biden-Trump debate in June, a pool of journalists will reportedly be close enough to the stage to hear the candidates this time. It might end up being their job to tell us what Trump said off mic. Unavoidably, it'll be all our jobs to describe what Trump said with the mics on, end quote. Okay? This is what we're dealing with, folks. These corporate media outlets, when they stain-wash Trump, when they focus on the horse race instead of Trump's criminality, when they cover things up or make it sound like it's not such a big deal, that's not journalism, that's propaganda. And every single one of them that cooperated should never work in journalism ever again. Okay? We have one more story here, and this is from WBUR.org. It's an interview. It's the headline is Media Sane-Washing Trump Vote Misinformation. All right. Let's see. Media saying washing Trump voters, misinformation election. I hate when they do that. Let me click on this. Ah, here it is. You know, when I download it, it don't always get the headline. WBUR, this was an interview conducted and written up by Paige Sutherland and Meghna Chakrabarty, and it was done October 8th, 2024, not too long ago. And the headline is the media brainwashing Trump? Okay. And these people from WBUR interviewed Michael Tomasky, who is the editor of the New Republic and also the editor-in-chief of the journal Democracy. And it just goes on to explain, quote, the media uses small sound bites and sensible summaries to make Donald Trump sound more coherent than he actually is. But by doing so, some argue the media ends up presenting a misleading picture of the former president that could misinform voters. So, is talking point, is the media brainwashing Trump? We have a right, with all the vast powers of the presidency, we have the right to know if a candidate is sane, is competent. Keep in mind, they were all in a rush, Democrat and Republican alike, to call out Biden as being too old. Biden's not too old. He's in pain. Anyone who's dealt with severe pain or who's taken care of someone who had severe pain, like my dad did, I could see it in Biden's walk. And before I found out about his, was a neuralgia, especially from his spine radiating down, I said that's where it was from. You can tell by the way he walks. And if you've never been in extreme pain, you don't know. You don't, it's hard to think when you're in that kind of pain. Okay? So we're going to kind of move on down here. And this was about on October 1st. This is Meghna Chakrabarty. The first question was, 1 week ago on October 1st, Donald Trump held a campaign event in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It was supposedly about school choice. Now, if you heard about the event on television or radio, you probably heard a soundbite like this. Donald Trump. No parent should be forced to send their child to a failing government-run school, end quote. Now, Chakrabarty points out, quote, if you glanced over the print headlines, you probably saw something similar. Quote, former President Donald Trump appears at campaign events in Wanakee and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Or during Milwaukee stops, Trump promotes taxpayer-funded school vouchers. The only headline that comes close to what the actual speech was like is from the Washington Post. This one goes like this, quote, Trump mixes up words, swerves among subjects in off-topic speech, end quote. Because though the speech was ostensibly about school choice, it took Trump more than half an hour of speaking to get there. He first meandered through a confused stream of consciousness that touched on his belief that Kamala Harris is a Marxist, that for some reason he wants to meet her father. He dropped a line about migrants being, quote, the real murderers, and a claim about how migrants are, quote, coming out of jails in the Congo. He talked about Elon Musk and Venezuelan tar. Wow. He even kicked off his speech by sending his, quote, love to the people suffering the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, and then offered this observation. And this is what Trump said, quote, amazingly, this is one of the biggest hurricanes anyone's ever seen. It's late in the season, very unusual. I guess the water was 20 feet high, and nobody expects that. People go up in the house, and they think they're safe on the second floor, and they weren't safe. This was one of the, they call it the waterfalls. This is one of the biggest they've ever seen, so it's too bad. Very late in the season, you almost don't even think of it as hurricane season, end quote. Wow. And then Chakrabarty points out that it's not late in the hurricane season, which usually lasts through like early June through November 30th, and sometimes it can last longer. But again, the media uses sound bites, and then they summarize something that is so different from what Trump actually said that, according to, you know, these reporters, it makes Trump sound they say more coherent than he actually is. I would say it makes him sound coherent when he's not, period. And, you know, Michael Tomasky's there, and Chakrabarty asked him, okay, define for us what you think of a sane washing. And Tomasky said, quote, I think you put it pretty well. And I should say for a couple of things. First of all, I didn't coin it. I know who coined it. It's a good phrase. I wish I had. Second of all, I would say that it's, and this is an important point for people to understand, it's not a conspiracy. It's not an act of collusion, of knowing collusion between mainstream media outlets and the Trump campaign to clean him up and to make him seem sane, more like, more what it is a case of is journalism. Journalists relying on the normal, traditional conventions of campaign reporting that simply don't apply when it comes to Donald Trump. Okay, end quote. So I'm going to look at what Tomasky said here. The journalist, and I understand what Tomasky's saying. These journalists are trying to, when I say conventions, trying to use the traditional way they've reported about any politician, and that those conventions, those methods don't apply to Trump. Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like trying to talk sense to a crazy person. It usually doesn't work. That's why they put them in, you know, a straitjacket. But I still fault the journalists because once they get a garbage answer, it's incumbent upon them to say, sir, you didn't answer my question. I'll restate it. And I never accept garbage from a politician when I'm interviewing them. I will be in their face that you didn't answer the question. Yeah, is that, those are your final words, okay, because I'm going to go by the quote. You know, and I think part of it is because I taught for so long, I don't accept silly answers. I just don't. Okay? So Tomasky explains this a little more. He covered a lot of campaigns. And Tomasky explains, quote, what you usually do is that you know what their main point is, what they're trying to communicate, and you use probably the best representative quote from the speech or from the text that expresses their point. Hence those headlines that you mentioned about Trump talking about school vouchers. Yeah, he talks about school vouchers, but he does all the other things that you say. And that's completely unprecedented for political candidates, in modern American campaigns. Usually political candidates, Democratic and Republican, liberal and conservative, they have a text. They follow it. It makes sense. It's coherent. You may agree with it or not agree with it, but it follows a certain pattern and a certain norm. Trump, of course, has nothing to do with that norm. And as you said in your very good introduction, he goes off on all kinds of tangents, end quote. I understand what Tomasky's saying. I still blame the mainstream journalist. Because my theory is, for whatever it's worth, could it be these mainstream, these corporate media people that make big money don't want to risk their six or seven figure paychecks by reporting honestly. So this is about the presidency. This is not about an election for dog catcher. All right? And there is a duty to show Trump in all his insanity. And so I respect Michael Tomasky, but I don't accept this excuse. You know, I've interviewed different politicians, usually via email because I'm not a stenographer, but, you know, even the good guys. Okay, I interviewed Alan Grayson several years ago when he was still a congressman. And, you know, that's the guy that years ago, as an example, said they're talking about health care. And the Republican, he said the Republican bill had two parts. One, don't get sick, and two, if you get sick, die fast. That guy. And the Republicans were all up in arms. So I interviewed him. And, you know, he's a good guy. You know, he was really fighting for universal health care. And we're on the phone talking, and I start asking questions. And all of a sudden he said, hey, I thought I was going to get easy questions. And I went, what did you say, Congressman? And he asked again. He said, I thought these were going to be easy questions. And I just went, okay, that's what I thought you said. Why would you think that, Congressman, with my next response? And he hems and he haws, and I go, Congressman, let me explain something. I don't do easy questions. I don't know why I do admire what you're doing, but I'm an honest journalist. And then I joked about how I'm a mean, short, little Jewish woman, and he's Jewish too. You know the routine. And he bust out laughing, and we went on with the interview. When they give me silliness, nonsense, I call them out because that's a journalist's job. Okay, a journalist's job is to let everybody know what's really going on, especially in government. So I don't agree with Tomasky on this one. I really don't. And, you know, you've got Trump's insane. We've heard his lunacy before. We don't really need to repeat it. You know, it's obvious Trump does use a stream of consciousness type thing. And when you're having a casual conversation with somebody, you can do that. But, again, usually people that are competent can go, whoops, I got off topic. Let's talk about the topic at hand. Trump can't do that. That's the problem. All right? We're in danger of possibly putting a lunatic incompetent back in the Oval Office. And the corporate media, I do think, has been covering for him because, again, the people that back him are billionaires. There's a lot of money. And they can say, we'll pull our ads. Period. So I think Tomasky is a little naive on this one. It's my own personal opinion. But that's what's going on here. And this is sane washing. All right? We're not going to go through all this. It's a little bit too long. All right? So that's sane washing. I'm going to take a break, and we're going to be back with one more story. And we're back. Okay, so this is a little different, but it still deals with the far right, which has taken over the Republican Party. And this is a piece from Right Wing Watch, People for the American Way. And this Right Wing Watch really does just that. They report on far right extremism. And this was a piece that was published October 17th, just a few days ago, by Kyle Mantilla, and this is about a pastor in Texas named Joel Webbin, and I became aware of this pastor. I was watching the Dollimore Report, which I love, and I looked this up. So Joel Webbin, this is the headline, wants to, quote, publicly execute a few women who have lied, end quote. Pastor Joel Webbin, he's a radical Christian nationalist. He advocates for something called, I've never heard of this before, quote, general equity theonomy. Ooh, that's a tongue twister. And apparently general equity theonomy, not theology, theonomy, is a theology on the far right that demands that, quote, laws and rules set out in the Old Testament still apply today, end quote. And keep in mind, Joel Webbin's, when you talk about the Old Testament, Joel Webbin's not Jewish, okay? He's a Christian. And he's misquoted stuff that is in what you all call the Old Testament, we call Torah, okay? It doesn't really translate well into English, but so this is really kind of crazy. Reading from this article, quote, this idea was the driving force behind legislation. Unabashed Christian nationalist pastor and Oklahoma State Senator Dusty Devers introduced earlier this year that would have amended the law for, quote, willfully, knowingly, and without probable cause, making a false report, end quote, alleging that someone committed a crime by changing the penalty so that those found guilty would face the same punishment that the falsely reported crime carries. Okay? So right now, filing a false report is already illegal in Oklahoma. And it's filing a false police report has always been illegal as far as I know. But Dusty Devers in Oklahoma wanted the legislation changed so the punishment would be what the punishment would have been dealt out with in the Bible. You know, and he was talking about the eye for an eye provisions that were found in the book of Genesis, Exodus, and Deuteronomy. Now, what Dusty Devers and this Pastor Joel Webber don't understand is, first of all, that eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth thing in ancient Judaism does not mean what people think it means. It is not justification for revenge. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, according to Torah, means that the severity of the punishment shall not exceed the severity of the crime. But Christians have twisted it to mean something else, to mean revenge. And then Webber, who's really a misogynist, went on to say, quote, in Israel, and this should be the law of the land in our country, in every country still to this day, this is a timeless principle, a timeless universal truth. If you perjure yourself by bearing false witness, accusing somebody else, whatever the penalty would have been for that person had they been found guilty, then that penalty should fall on your head for falsely accusing them, end quote. And Webber goes on to say, quote, so if you accuse in a court of law, falsely accuse someone of murder, and it turns out in the final analysis that that person is not guilty of murder, and the penalty for murder should be capital punishment, life for life, then you, even though you have not committed murder, because you falsely accused someone else for murder, and the penalty for that crime would have been death, you should be put to death. And Webber goes on to say, quote, if that were to occur and the just penalties were to be enforced, you, the false accuser, is now put to death. And that's a public death. It's a public sentence, publicly carried out. Then the citizens of the United States of America, you know what they would do? A hashtag Me Too would end real fast. False accusing, playing the victim when you're actually not. You know how to end that real fast? All you do is publicly execute a few women who have lied, end quote. Well, first of all, Pastor Joel Webber, I'm going to say a bad word, doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. First of all, in Israel, that is not the law of the land, and it's not the law of Torah. This is where Christians misinterpret, okay? And I'm not preaching, but just to give a little background to show how stupid this man is. In Judaism, first of all, we're told we really should learn Hebrew because the Torah, the Hebrew does not readily translate into European languages. A lot is lost in translation because in the original Hebrew, there's multiple layers of meaning. So that, yeah, we have the big Torah scroll, which you guys call the King James Bible, Old Testament, but the Torah scroll is much thicker. But then we have an entire library of what's called Torah commentary, where every little word is analyzed. I kid you not. And so, again, the eye for an eye and tooth for tooth thing, that is not a call for revenge or a justification for revenge. It never was. That particular aspect of Torah means, again, that the severity of the punishment shall not exceed the severity of the alleged crime. The exact opposite of what Webber's saying. But he's calling for public execution of women that lied. That's what he's doing. This guy is, he serves as pastor at the Covenant Bible Church in Texas. He's also the founder of Right Response Ministries. He helps organize events like next year's Christ is King, How to Defeat Trash World, and he's a Christian nationalist, and he's incredibly dangerous. So I wanted to make you aware of that. These people are nut jobs, and they truly hate women. Make no mistake about it. They just do. They want to turn the clock back and make women slaves. That's it. Okay? This is what we're dealing with here. Okay, folks, so I hope you learned something from this. We have three musical parodies. Give me a second here. The first musical parody is called Draft Dodger Halloween Song by Ukulele TV. Okay? And this, obviously, the Draft Dodger is Donald Trump. You know, Cadet Bone Spurs. So, with no further ado, enjoy. Give us a minute here. Here we go.
Call me loving, pig in a Chinese suit, and I'd like to kick him right in the patoot. His uncle went to MIT, he thinks that he's a genius. That may be, but Stormy knows he's got a little penis. Go, Steve, rap dodging, call me loving, pig in a Chinese suit, and I'd like to give him a one-finger salute. He says he'd grab his sister, cause he's filthy rich. But if he was in prison, he'd be the sell-off bitch. Go, Caesar, draft dodging, copy loving, pig in a Chinese suit. He wants to run our country, isn't that a hoot? He poses as a Superman, tough as he can be. But if you check the bathroom cam, I'll bet he sits to pee. Go, Caesar, draft dodging, copy loving, pig in a Chinese suit, and I'd like to kiss him with my size 12 boots. He passed a basic cognitive test, believes he's a stable genius. Proved it, found that miracle cure, bleach shot intravenous. Go, Caesar, draft dodging, Tommy loving, pig in a Chinese suit. He's ruling in our country and doesn't give a hoot. Every choice he makes, he shoots another foot. He looks like a millipede with a hole in every piece. Go, Caesar, draft dodging, Tommy loving, pig in a Chinese suit, and I'd like to flip him a two-finger salute. He stayed in New York City till marry a banquet loan. Then dodge Lady Justice, so send the fraudster home. Go, Caesar, draft dodging, Tommy loving, pig in a Chinese suit. His modus operandi, redirecting his donor's loot. Can't wait till he's convicted and in the big house too. That draft dodging, Tommy loving, pig in a Chinese suit. That draft dodging, Tommy loving, pain in the patoot, pain in the patoot. Favorite beating, pain in the, pain in the, pain in the patoot.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that one. We have two more, okay? The next one is something that you've heard before, and this is the Project 2025 song, okay? But it's a good one. It's written in the style, remember the old Schoolhouse Rock? The one, you know, he's a Bill. Well, this one is Project 2025. We played it before, but you need to understand what's at stake here.
Hey there, who are you?
Oh, just the most important document in our country's history.
You mean the Constitution?
Nope.
The Declaration of Independence?
Yes, again.
The Federalist Papers?
The Federalist, what? No, even more important than whatever you just said. Now sit right here and I'll tell you all about me. I'm just a little paper for the ages, a way to set the government straight, a short 887 pages on how to make America great again by forcing through the president's agendas, removing all of those who disagree, replacing with our loyal party members, and reclaim our great country. In sum, give power to the president to authorize the government, to legislate morality, and wrestle back normality from Marxist ideologies that infiltrate our policies like gender, race, or anything woke. We're gonna abolish the Department of Education. Turn the swearing in into a coronation. America's great salvation will arrive with Project 2025.
Coronation? You mean like a king?
No, it's called the unitary executive theory. Give the next president unchecked power to do whatever they want.
So, a king?
Oh, let's not get hung up on semantics. Here's how it's gonna work. Once that we've started the transition, and no one's left to tell us to wait, we'll go through every policy position, get rid of all the language that we hate, like civil rights, diversity, and unions, and pronouns to mention but a few. Defunding any liberal institutions that dare question what we do.
I'm pretty sure the Supreme Court.
Oh, the Supreme Court. That's a good one. Now, where was I? Abortion will be pretty much illegal, and reproductive rights will be gone. We'll get back to the biblical ideal that a family means a daddy and a mom with kids. Repeal the crazy climate regulations to get in the economy's way, with everyone reporting to the stations on Inauguration Day. When we give power to the president to authorize the government to legislate morality, expelling abnormalities like opposite ideologies, protecting inequalities like gender, race, and anything woke, we're gonna abolish the Department of Education. Convert the melting pot into a Christian nation. The stage is set, we'll be going live in 2025.
I can't seriously say all that.
Wanna bet? Come on, let's crack me open.
H-124.
Make more nuclear weapons.
H-250.
End the war on fossil fuels.
H-214.
Noble gun violence protection.
H-298.
Feeding hungry kids at our schools.
Turn-2-5.
Send the books from the classroom.
563.
Make it hard to register to vote.
H-449.
Dismantle Medicare. Kill off the grizzly bear. Delete the term sexual orientation, gender equality awareness, the sensitivity, diversity, equity, inclusion, abortion, reproductive health, and reproductive rights out of every rule, regulation, contract, grant, and piece of federal legislation that exists. And that's an actual quote. And that, my friend, is only the beginning of how this makes America great. You'll be so overwhelmed with all the winning that you won't know what you've lost till it's too...
Wait! This doesn't sound great at all.
No?
No, it sounds like a fucking nightmare.
Well, I guess if you wanted to, there's still some things you can do to stop it.
Like what?
Well, if you vote to save democracy, stand against autocracy, tell your friends and family, enough with this insanity. We fought too long to part with these essential civil liberties like privacy and equity and bodily autonomy. What defines a family? Equality and empathy, and we're not going back, and maybe we can stop this radical abomination. The future all depends on your participation. That's the way democracy will thrive. America was made for you and me, so let's defend our freedom and our dignity. Now raise your voice and let's keep hope alive in 2025.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that. We have one more parody and then final words. This one is, this musical parody is titled Not Going Back, and it's by William Gallison for the Parody Project. Enjoy. Give it a minute. We're not going back. Okay, we may have a commercial. I apologize. Sorry about that. Get rid of it in seconds.
This is an exercise.
There we go.
But can you tell me when exactly that was, my friend? When the Star Spangled Banner first waved? Well, it wasn't that great for the people insane. You say you want to go back to the first old days, when the rivers would bow and the skies were gray. We've come so far since then. Do you really want to live back?
hate and fear, or do you wanna get together as one?
Shoulder to shoulder, building work is done.
Do you wanna go back to the days again,
when a man was judged by his shade of skin, and a woman didn't have a voice,
and what happened to her body was not a choice?
Okay, I hope you enjoyed it. Well, final thoughts. We kind of go back to this. You know, I saw this on Facebook, and it rings true. In fact, I wish I had written it. It was so good. And I saw it because one of my cousins posted it. So kudos to Jerry Rosen, my dear cousin. I have to read this exactly as written. I don't know if Jerry wrote it or if I've seen it before, but it's perfect in terms of the sentiment. Quote, agree to disagree is reserved for things like, I don't like coffee, not racism, homophobia, sexism, not basic common decency, not human rights, not the right to be treated equally regardless of race, religion, color, creed, or sexual orientation. We do not have a difference of opinion. We have a difference in morality, end quote. And that's exactly what it is. People that claim we want to agree to disagree, no. You're talking about pizza slices, or you don't want pepperoni on your pizza, or you don't like coffee, it's one thing. But when you're talking about denying human rights to groups of people because you don't personally like or approve them, no, that's a difference. That's not a difference of opinion. That's a difference in morality. And the people that want to deny basic human rights and equal, let me backtrack. Those who want to deny equal human rights to groups because they don't like them, whatever reason, the people that want to deny equal rights are the ones who are immoral. Really that simple. So with that, I just want to end this show. We will continue to report on this. Everybody, you need to vote. And to those who are progressives, look, I don't care if you think Kamala isn't good on the Gaza versus Israel thing. I truly don't care. Because if you're foolish enough to think that your protest vote for a third-party candidate is somehow going to change things, you're wrong. All it's going to do is help Trump get back in office, and Trump will be far worse. This is not the time for sophomoric tantrums coming from the left. It just isn't. And if you're really that worried about it, after the election, after we get Madam President in office, then you can keep working on these other issues. But stop acting like a bunch of spoiled brats, because I'm tired of it. You know, people on the left claim that they are so worried about communities of color. Well, what do you think is going to happen if, God forbid, Trump gets back in office? Are you saying that you're willing to sacrifice one community of color to benefit another alleged community of color? Grow up, Junior. We need everybody to vote against Trump. But then we need everybody to stay engaged. That's what needs to happen. People need to stay engaged to work on issues they care about, not just disappearing, only come back 4 years later when they get attention from the press. Understand that presidents appoint Supreme Court justices, and those justices affect us a lot more. Again, I know people are tired of voting lesser of the two evils. I get it. But you have to deal with the reality on the ground. Yes, lesser of two evils. Your choice is between a highly competent person, namely Kamala Harris, who actually can do the job, and an incompetent lunatic that has most likely committed treason by basically handing over our military intelligence to the enemies in Russia. Your choice is, if you're worried about communities of color, Trump's going to be far worse. Kamala is a person of color. This is not the time to protest that. You want to protest lesser of the two evils? Do that in between presidential elections. Stay active. A lot of these people, they get involved in the presidential election because it's sexy. Well, guess what? You need to be involved in the state legislatures because that's where the power is. You need to be involved in the federal legislature as well. Not just throwing a tantrum because you didn't get your way. Trump has to be stopped at any cost. He is insane. He is a Nazi. And he is a danger to whatever last shreds of democracy we have here. Project 2025 will be enacted if Trump gets back in office. So I'm not telling you don't fight for the things you believe in. Yes. You think Kamala is the lesser of the two evils, whatever. Vote for Kamala and then stay engaged on the issues you care about. There's a reason why politicians don't pay attention to young people. Because more often than not, you guys show up, you have your protest, and then you go away again and half of you don't vote. That's a statistic. That's a statistical fact. Time to grow up, vote. Vote like your very lives, any shred of democracy depends on it, because it does. With that, I say good night and bless us, whatever you believe in, and Lord knows we're going to need it. Bye-bye.